Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Barca are back in the camp now and were for 24 hours at least top of La Liga. Lewandowski scored the first goal. Athletic Club were very obliging opponents and Oyun Sunset took the opportunity to make history and become the first player sent off on the new pitch. And you could have been there to see it for a mere 589 euros.
I saw that.
In the main stand. It was only 199 for the upper corner too, but you do have to wear a hard hat and carry a hod of bricks. Xabi Alonso is clinging to his job with Real Madrid. And let me check. Let me double check. Top of the league. Yes, disastrously last night they drew. Whoever heard of a draw? It's tight up there. Villarreal have made their best ever start. And fourth place Atletico are just 4 points behind Real Madrid. There was more inconsistent refereeing in the Liga. Question, is it okay to do overhead kicks or not? Now make up your mind. It shouldn't matter whether you kick the ball into the net to win the Valencia derby or kick your opponent's head off his shoulders like Anthony did. Just be consistent. thank you, Patreons, for your continued support. We've got a Black Friday deal, everybody. You can exclusively sign up for the same price as it's always been. Because we've never changed it. So there we are. We're not proper businessmen, Terry. You're supposed to every now and again go and put your prices up for some reason.
Put it up and then bring it down for one day.
Oh, that's what we should have done.
Sure that happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe Barcelona will bring a Black Friday deal in and you won't have to get a mortgage to watch your game. Yes. So where are we going to... Let's start with the return to the camp now, shall we? With 45,000 fans in there, 45,000 very wealthy people. All committed fans who've been saving up, waiting for this moment. Oh, you've said before, haven't you, that there's... I think Lamine Yamal had only played 7 minutes at the stadium. And, yep. And there were like Dani Olmo had never played there. Hansi Flick had never managed Barcelona there.
Yep. So all the young ones. Yeah. Most of the young players, Kubasi and Casado and Bernal and people like that have made the breakthrough in the last couple of years. None of them have played there as a Barcelona player.
Yeah.
So it was a big occasion, and they played it well. It was obviously, even though the stadium was no one behind one goal, I'm told that's going to be rectified pretty soon as well. So once we got the four lower tiers full, it will look, it's incredible how similar it looks to the old one, which is obviously is in the old, on the premises, but it does look familiar. But I guess when that top tier is done and a roof is on it, which they didn't have on the old Camp Nou, then it will look different to the old one. But it was a big event. And I thought Athletic Club were good opponents for all different reasons. A traditional La Liga fixture between the two of the three that have never been relegated. Historic football club in Spain. And also the fact that Athletic Club are not very good at the moment. So they were obliging, and they were in this game again. So it was ideal opponents for Barcelona. And they played well. We had an interview on before the game from Hansi Flick. He's still doing all his interviews in English, and he said that when he was managing against Barcelona, it was in his mind that one day he would love to manage in that stadium, manage Barcelona in that stadium, and for a long time his sights have been set on that. And you could see it meant a lot for him to actually, I mean, he's been manager of Barcelona, it's his second season, but to be back in the camp now, it meant a lot to him as well as manager of Barcelona. And it was, it was the perfect start to a new stadium. And it didn't take them long to get amongst the goals. And you could see the determination and pride from Lewandowski to be the first player to score. You saw his delight when he scored the goal. It wasn't just any old goal. It was the first thing back in the new stadium. And he was delighted with that. And it played out well for Barcelona. It was the perfect afternoon for them.
Yes. Unai Simon, Spain's number one, Terry. Tell me about his performance.
Awful. I mean, but the two goals that he concedes one from Lewandowski, one from Ferran Torres. Neither should go past him. Lewandowski, they're doing what all good strikers do. I mean, Ferran Torres, one, he was under pressure from Danny Vivian. He was sliding in, last-ditch talent challenge. Athletic had given the ball away on both occasions for both of those goals. And when Ferran Torres gets his shot away, just in the nick of time, you're thinking, he's probably thinking, that's not going in, and it crept under the body of Unai Simon. And likewise, Lewandowski, his touch takes him away from goal. And when he has the shot, I didn't expect it. It was almost a disbelief that's gone in. I thought it hit the side netting or something. Cause it didn't. It wasn't the most powerful of attempts. It was the basic requirement of a striker in that position: hit the target and hope for the best. If you know, it's not the best strike I've ever done. Probably going to be saved. And you can see Lewandowski on the slow motion. He hits it, doesn't think it's got a chance of going in, and is delighted when it does creep under Unai Simon again. And it's an issue. I mean, I had to talk to a lot of people on him out there. And Unai Simon's position as number one goalkeeper for Spain in the national team is not in doubt. It's not up for debate. Not by them, but the fact that Luis de la Fuente must have admitted on numerous times that he's not changing a goalkeeper. I kind of think it's a dereliction of duty if Unai Simon's not playing well, just because the national team are playing well and scoring goals and doing well in tournaments. If there's a better goalkeeper around, then I think it's his job to actually make that change. You know, it may be costly one day that he hasn't got the best goalkeeper in goal. I've never been convinced he should have been Spain's number one. I think there are other goalkeepers in Spain that should be competing for the spot. And now I think Joan Garcia, of the Barcelona goalkeeper, is really pushing him hard. But he hasn't got a cap yet. So it's unlikely that Joan Garcia gets it. You know, I think Raya will be there. Alex Ramiro, in my opinion, is a better goalkeeper. He'll probably be the third choice goalkeeper. Will Joan Garcia get called into the squad? Probably not. If De La Fuente sticks with the three that he's already got, you can make a case for David Soria, Hetafe, who's been consistent over the years. I think he's an excellent goalkeeper. So I think it's his job, De La Fuente, to look at it. And so Unai Simon hasn't been at his best this season. Far from it. He does make mistakes, and that cost his team at the weekend. I was disappointed in his interview after the game when they asked him about the performance. He didn't blame everybody else, but he was blaming the collective as a leader of the team. I mean, he should have taken responsibility and said, but it doesn't help when I've made two mistakes. But he didn't mention it. He just said, we're not scoring enough goals. That's a problem, of course. We're not defending as a team. He never mentioned the fact he's not keeping shots out. So it was, they were poor. So Barcelona were good. I get why Hansi Flick picked a weird midfield, Eric Garcia. There's no Frankie de Jong suspended, no Pedri, of course. First time they haven't played together for about, first time either one of them hasn't played for about 3 years. And we all expected Casado to play, but he played Eric Garcia as the holding midfield player. And Dani Olmo and Fermin Lopez. I know why he did it, because he was playing against a team that only scored 12 goals. And they got six of those in their first three games. So they've got six in the last 10 now. And he probably thought, well, do you know what? I fancy my team to score two or three, but this team might be even more athletic club and not going to score that many. So he just went out with an all-out attacking team and it paid off. So it was Eric Garcia was, I mean, he got the full treatment when he got substituted towards the end. They were treating him like Pedri. and do you know, I was looking at Eric Garcia and he's like, I don't know if any of our young viewers will, young listeners will know. Remember the program Stars in Their Eyes, where someone from the public pretended and impersonated a pop star. It was pop singers, wasn't it? Rock stars. And Eric Garcia has that look about him where they say, Eric, can you go out and be, tonight I'm going to be Jules Koundé. And then on Saturday, today I'm going to be Frankie de Jong. And he plays in all these positions and he actually looks like the players he's replacing. In all of them, he's like an impersonator, a football impersonator. And I've often seen that over the years. You see young players playing at football clubs and you think, and he looks just like a player in the first team. And he's been remarkable. He's progressed in the last couple of seasons after being on loan at Girona. And I'm thinking, well, that's where he's going to stay. He did well at Girona. They did well. And slightly surprised Girona didn't keep him. Slightly surprised Barcelona chose to keep him. And now you see why. I mean, he was outstanding in that position. So, yeah, he was good. They were all good. But they didn't have to be the brilliant best to beat a really disappointing and quite depressing Athletic club, to be honest.
Yeah, and the usual raft of red cards to discuss today. A very obvious one was Sansets.
Yeah.
I mean, the ref missed it the first time round, didn't he? But
I have no idea how he missed that. I mean, he was in the perfect position. He was 5 metres away. It was clear as anything. As soon as I saw the replay, I thought, well, I'd be amazed if, because there was no intent to play the ball. It was a frustrated challenge from a player who's not playing well this season. And his team were getting beat heavily. And he just lost his head. And it was a wild kick, endangering an opponent. It ticked all the boxes for a red card. So how the referee missed it, I have no idea. But VAR did intervene and the right decision eventually was made.
Yes, right.
On this occasion.
Let's move on to the other. Well, actually, it's a close race at the top, but Real Madrid we're going to do next.
Yep.
Because it's an absolutely cracking game. Alan is one of our patrons. Feels sorry for Elche. He says, brave on the ball, even after the first equaliser. Now, he thinks, we'll get to this in a bit, he thinks that the VAR should have intervened on the Bellingham goal, clear foul on the keeper. And about Mbappe's disappointment, maybe an indication that he's not happy with the current style. So tell us. We'll talk about the game first of all. And I think Alan was right. Start off with some praise for Elche.
Yes,
it was a cracking game, wasn't it? Particularly after Elche scored and Real Madrid really picked up the pace, and also made changes. But yeah, really competitive. And Elche, they weren't clinging on and you know, wasting time and slowing the game down or ruining the game, whether they were taking the game to Real Madrid.
Well, I'd just done the Getafe Atletico Madrid match, which was tough going. And let's not forget, we'll talk about that game later, but Real Madrid struggled at Getafe, and Getafe played at underdog style, which we all believe that they're entitled to do, you know. But Elche's performance last night as an underdog is one of the best ever underdog performances I've ever seen in my life. Because they went toe-to-toe with a similar style to Real Madrid. They trusted their ability on the ball. They trusted their style of football. The passing was... It was awesome to watch. And to have that courage and bravery to stick to your style and stick to your plan is quite rare when you have an underdog, a newly promoted team, playing against one of the giants of European football. You could understand it if they played a back five and kept everybody, you know, another bank of four in front, leave Rafa Mir, Andre Silva, or Alvaro Rodriguez up front on his own. We'll be direct. We'll try and break the game break the game up. We'll slow it down. There was none of that. They were so good. It was a joy to watch. It really was, and it wasn't your classic underdog performance. And for that, I think they deserved the win. I mean, they ended up conceding two goals from set pieces almost. The first one was a direct result of a set piece. The second one was a secondary knockdown from the set piece, and Real Madrid having lots of players in the penalty area. But from open play, Real Madrid struggled to break them down. An extraordinary style of play, courageous style of play, as I say, and even the setup is not what you'd expect. Kind of took Real Madrid by surprise, I think, that they were so adventurous. I've got their system as 3-1-6. And that's how it was. Two central defenders. Fullbacks are nowhere near playing in the fullback position. Mark Aguado is playing just in front of the two central defenders. He's the only midfield player. Then in front of them, you've got Hector Fall, Dean Garner, who was excellent, Alex Fabas, who was... They were all fantastic. Valera playing on the left, Amir and Silva up front. And I'm thinking, how did that work against Real Madrid? Well, it worked because they kept possession, they had purpose to their possession, and they were always a threat. And they outplayed Real Madrid last night.
And really good goals, weren't they? They really cleverly worked the first one, the Alex Fabas one, with a little back heel in the finish. And Courtois had made saves previously. It wasn't a mistake by any stretch of the imagination, was it? And then after... Housen's goal, Alvaro Rodriguez scored, didn't he, against his the club. He's only 21 still.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a clause in it. I think they've sold him, but I'm pretty sure there'll be a clause. And he was hesitant on celebrating, wasn't he? But you've got to celebrate a goal like that. I mean, it's come off the bench, and he's, as you say, still only young. I'm sure Real Madrid haven't given up on him. I hope not. I hope there is a clause there. I'm pretty sure they normally do that. Because I think he's a talent, and I think he's got a chance of really being a outstanding centre forward. And everyone's desperate for centre forwards, and he's got all the attributes. He's playing second fiddle at the moment to the other two, Rafa Mir and André Silva. They're playing on a more regular basis, but he was fabulous. I mean, they all were. I mean, it's as I say, that bravery to play that style of football against Real Madrid when you could get picked apart. They play a high defensive line. They didn't play it as much last night as they did when they played against Barcelona. And they didn't. Yeah, they were outstanding. I mean, Afan Gruber and Schuster at the back on their own, and they're facing Mbappe, Rodrigo, Trent Alexander on down one side. No idea what was happening down the left of Real Madrid with their selection with Fran Garcia, and Alvaro Carreras. Dani Ceballos was playing very deep. Yeah, it was a weird team selection, but still should have been enough for Real Madrid to win away from home against Elche.
Right, let's have a look at Real Madrid's formation and everything. But I'll share my screen with you, Terry, and then you can talk us through what's happening here. So this is where you can nick this off ass.com if you want to do the same,
Yeah.
and then go st results statistics. So let's have a look. Who have I got on here? So that's Fran Garcia. So
Yep.
yeah, so he is. Let's describe that. Very, very. That's his heat map. His very advanced left side.
He's playing where Vinicius plays.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of touches of the ball, that must be
Yeah.
said. And then we'll stick on Alvaro. Oh, yeah, there he is. Alvaro Fernandez, as they call him. Right, so we're sticking him on. Let's take Fran Garcia off. Yeah, so yeah.
You didn't need Fran Garcia.
No,
And that's
yeah.
not we I mean all weekend we get team sheets with the official lineups and they're all wrong.
Yeah.
Completely wrong. And this one had Alvaro Carreras, Alvaro Fernandez playing as the one of the three centre backs with Fran Garcia left wing
Yeah,
back
no, he's
and Trent
definitely not, is he?
Alexander right back.
He has
Right
literally
wing back.
one, two touches of the
Yeah.
ball centrally, and that's it.
Yeah.
Everything's down that left side, Frank.
Yeah. So that was a bizarre one.
Yeah. Let's take that off and have a look at Trent Alexander-Arnold. So he's right.
That's what he does, though, even if he's right back in a four.
Yeah. So he's his spread the whole length of the
Yeah.
right flank, isn't it? With I guess that he's a corner. I guess he's a free kick
Yeah.
someday. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he does that as a whether he's in a three or a four.
Yeah.
Maybe in a three, there'd be less touches in his own half. But I think that touch map there identifies that he was playing in a right back position, really.
Very. It's advanced,
It's
isn't
a
it? But
good
like you
spread,
say,
isn't it? It's advanced, but it's a good spread. And Trent Alexander-Arnold prefers to attack than defend, and it's the strength of his game.
I'm just clicking on for the patrons can look at the video of this. So they're
And
saying
Dani
that.
Ceballos was really deep as well, so he kind of had the look of that the holding midfield player that Tchouaméni does, that he sits, pretty deep in around the near the centre backs. Didn't have much of a heat map at all, Dani Ceballos.
And this is Arda Güler. So on social media after the game, Arda Güler took all the blame for with an element of criticism for Xabi Alonso for playing him as a
Yeah,
midfield.
if you can click on the average formation as well, that's a good aspect of how you look at the. I mean, Elche's. You can do Elche as well because I laughed at Elche's.
I'll take Elche off for now, and
Yeah.
then we'll do position media. Let's take the subs off as well because it confuses us. Right, so there we are. There's average positions. So that's Fran Garcia, that's Alvaro, and then Mbappe, Rodrigo is. They're like two forwards,
Two
aren't
centre
they?
forwards, yes.
Trent Alexander-Arnold is, well, he's halfway between the sort of left back and right back in terms of how
Yeah.
high up the pitch he is on average. Bellingham's slightly more advanced of Arda Güler.
And
And Dani
Ceballos.
Ceballos is almost on Housen's toes.
He's almost one of the back three. If that was the back three and it wasn't Dani Ceballos, we'd be saying, oh, well, they played three at the back. So it was disjointed. As I say, Barcelona made light work of Athletic Club with not one single recognised midfield player. Eric Garcia is probably a centre back or a right back. He played midfield. Dani Olmo's a number 10. Fermín López is a number 10. So all these players that Real Madrid have played in this game, Xabi Alonso is getting criticism because of the players that he left out and left on the bench. But there should still be a strong enough Real Madrid lineup to play well and play better than they did against Elche.
I see your point about that. I've now put on, by the way, for the purposes of the tape, Hector Fort is the most advanced Elche player.
Yeah. And in the lineup, he'd be down as a right back. And he's not. He's up front. And
He's a
look
right
at
winger.
that.
He's a
Yeah,
right
they've
winger,
got
isn't he?
Aguado, I think he's number eight. He's a central midfield player.
With the other, and the other
And
two is
yeah,
being Garner and
I was
Fabregas.
joking when I called it a 3-1-6. There was almost a front six there. So that's what I was talking about, the courage of Elche and Eder Sarabia to go and play players in advanced positions and play out the back. They made very few mistakes in possession. They were pressurised adequately by Real Madrid. There wasn't a lack of pressing from Real Madrid, but they played their way out of trouble and then found themselves in midfield and then breaking forward. And they always carried a threat because they had numbers in and around the penalty box. So I think it was, as I say, I thought it was an extraordinary underdog performance. We've seen it over the years with the big clubs, not just in Spain, but in other leagues around Europe. Underdogs don't play like that. Very few. I mean, Rayo have tried it in the past, but there's still an element of Rayo when they play that, in their own stadium with the three stands and the small pitch, and they work hard. But this Elche team were just outskilled Real Madrid.
They've got this weird run of games, haven't they, now, Real Madrid? Six away games in a
It
row,
was,
isn't it?
yes.
Then so they've got Olympiacos in the week. How serious is all this Xabi Alonso
It's getting quite
criticism?
serious.
It seems excessive.
It is. I agree with you. And it's 3 games now, isn't it? So they lost to Liverpool, they drew with Rayo, and they drew with Elche, and suddenly Barcelona are breathing down their neck. Atletico Madrid are back in, and you chuck in the Atleti 5-2 defeat. You chuck in the 4-0 PSG defeat in the Club World Cup. That's another weapon to turn, if you want to criticise Xabi Alonso. Now, the constant rumour is that the relationship between him and the players isn't good. That's the constant stick they're using to beat him with. We have no evidence. We don't know that. We don't have that evidence. The players are
And
not
people saying it,
behaving.
it'll be many revolutions away from anyone who would know. So everyone will just
Yeah.
keep saying it now.
And I think he's kept things private. More so than Ancelotti and Zidane, so he has less coaching staff. He's eliminated a lot of the people that do the day-to-day work at the training ground away from the changing room on match days, which I think has upset a few people, which in turn might be the people that are then spreading the stories that, oh, I'm one of the messers and we're not allowed in the changing room on a match day, or I'm one of the analysts and we don't travel with the first team anymore. But you see it, and there's two buses turn up at Premier League games now, with one bus full of backroom staff. And I do wonder, when leaks do appear, don't they? Teams are leaked before. And I do wonder, it's impossible now for a manager when you've got, how many players? 20 other players on one bus and 20 or 30 people on another bus that all know the team. That the chances of stuff being leaked are, and chances of rumours, false rumours, and Xabi Alonso has done that. It's I think he's I actually make him right. I think it's people, players do need the backroom staff. They rely on them for all different reasons, and they do have important jobs to do, but you don't need them all there on a match day.
You need them
And there's
so.
an even element of, I've always wondered about, I saw five goalkeepers warming up last season for Manchester City against Fulham. There was two goalkeeping coaches, three goalkeepers, and one wasn't even on the bench, but he was stripped, and there was five of them doing goalkeeping practice on the pitch. And I'm thinking, do you even need the goalkeeping coach there on a match day? I guess, what does he do? Apart from the warm-up.
Takes a few
But,
balls and
I mean, and some of them sit there with their gloves on. I'm thinking, you're 48, you haven't played in goal for 15 years, and you wasn't very good. And now you're a goalkeeping coach, and you sit there with your goalkeeping gloves on the bench. So I think that's what Xabi Alonso, is it a mistake? It might be, because you know, you only need a few people to turn against you and be offended that they're not involved.
It's the most political club, isn't it? That, yeah. And with Manchester United, isn't it? You know, I know they're the giant clubs, you know, but they bring so much politics with them that, such as, for example, the man who runs the league, sort of plaintively crying that Real Madrid doesn't recognise how much of a Real Madrid fan he is, and then everybody else sort of says, "Hang on, what? You're like..." So this is Tebas, isn't he? Who's saying, why are they not like me at Real Madrid? I'm a massive Real Madrid fan. Always have been.
And it's still not currying favour with Florentino Perez.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, he's not enough of a Real Madrid
fan. Already enjoying that now, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Tebas is complaining.
Yeah. So the disallowed, sorry, the non-disallowed goals, Are you disallowing either of those goals?
No.
The Real Madrid goals?
No. I think the first one, it takes a lot of replays to see that the crossing does bounce off the T-shirt area of Bellingham's arm. It's not intentional. He doesn't score. It falls to house and he scores. So I think that one's okay. The foul, alleged foul by Vinicius on the Equipeña for the second one, and the ball going out of play, it doesn't go out of play. It's still in play with Mbappe. Gets it back in. That's legitimate. There might be a foul by Vinicius on Iñaki Peña, but he jumps up. He reacts quickly. He jumps up and he continues with the action. He sees it going to the byline and then Mbappe cutting him back and Bellingham scoring. Then he throws himself on the floor and claims injury. We've seen it. If he had have stayed down initially, and not been part of the action when Mbappe slides it back and Bellingham scores, then a bigger question would have been asked.
Yeah. I mean, he was injured, wasn't he? He kicked him in the face, didn't he?
So,
But the question is that just a normal part of a challenge where Vinicius is desperately trying to get a ball and Iñaki Peña's desperately 50-50. Trying to block it out and they just come together and it's... You have to be brave to be a goalkeeper because you do get a boot in the face every now and again. But
it does.
I
don't agree with the fact that if you stay down and pretend you're injured and but that is the case. It's like we've joked about players doing it with penalties.
Yeah.
If they feel there's a kick, they stay down, they sit on the floor, they're not in pain, but they sit there and sit there and sit there until someone has to look at VAR and go, "Oh, he has caught him."
Yeah.
You know, whereas if it had got up and carried on playing, that the incident would have been brushed aside. The fact that Iñaki Peña didn't, if he'd have stayed on the floor and not been part of the action, then the referee would have looked at it, VAR would have looked at it and thought, well, he's not in goal. When the goal's scored, he's down injured. Mm. So there's the foul. But he jumped up, tried to react, which is the right thing to do, but unfortunately it doesn't get you the foul. That. So I thought both Real Madrid goals were legitimate.
Yeah, yeah. And then another red card just for, you know, we couldn't go a game without
that was
red
silly,
card.
Wasn't it? That was an obvious one, second yellow.
Yeah, 96th minute, isn't it? Mbappe's so skillful, though, isn't he?
You still can't put his shirt.
I'm not advocating you're allowed.
He wasn't running away from goal, was he? It wasn't critical at that time. I think what happened, and there had been two or three fouls. I mean, I've just said that Real Madrid, both of their goals should have been allowed. But there was two or three fouls in the build-up to either goal that could have gone Elche's way that didn't. And I think that was a consequence of Victor Chus getting the ump with something, another decision that didn't go. So the smaller decisions weren't going Elche's way. And that was the frustration that spilled over from that little period of play where they thought they should have had a couple of fouls. I did as well. The referee didn't give them play, continued. And that was a build-up of frustration. But it could have been a problem, but they got away with just the 10 men.
Villarreal have made their best ever start to a La Liga campaign, Terry, I read. I haven't memorised them all, but that's what I read. They beat Mallorca by 2-1. And, I mean, they're genuinely up there, aren't they? He's a terrific manager, isn't he? You know, it's a well-run club, but no way should it be punching up there with their opponents that they're directly up against.
And I keep saying I don't put them in the race. I can't see it happening. But then I look at their squad. I haven't been in love with them this season because I never know who's playing for them.
Yeah, right.
But then when I looked at I worked on the game against Mallorca, and you look at the squad, I've got 24 senior players who are all good.
Mm.
And my argument would be, and I made it in commentary, they have a similar squad to Atletico Madrid in terms of squad depth. Now, have they got the best 11? Probably not. but it's probably fourth in La Liga. If you pick in your best 11, Villarreal will be fourth. But we've seen the injury problems that Real Madrid have had, that Barcelona have had. Atleti have not got away with it. It's something they're doing that is different to Barcelona and Real Madrid, and they're not picking up the injuries. Oblak and Lenormand are the only two that's injured at the moment. But Villarreal have got, which is kind of, they've suffered in Europe. I don't know, there's been changes made in Europe. Maybe the Champions League team isn't as strong as the La Liga team. Who plays up front? Is it Mkhitaryan, Oluwaseyi, or is it Gerard Moreno, Ayoze Perez? There's four good strikers there.
Hmm.
I actually don't think the balance is right with the two old guys playing together. There's a mix, I think, that's to be found, because Gerard Moreno is still good, Ayoze Perez is still good. But their pace isn't what it once was. Jeremy Reina's never been the quickest, but he's still amongst the goals he scores in this one. And you look around, the whole squad, I mean, it's the bench was full of talent. And it's like looking at Atletico Madrid and you think, but he's got half a dozen players he can put on there. Buchanan came on as well. Oluwaseyi came on. Mkhitaryan came on. You know, there's a lot of good players at Villarreal. So Mielke are struggling, but it was a decent performance. And it's I liked the stylish finish from Oluwaseyi to tap in, but he was facing the wrong way and it could have gone horribly wrong. But it was a stylish finish from him. A good start to the game. Gerard Moreno scoring, Samuel Costas equalising pretty quickly. It was a really good game. Really enjoyed it.
Yes, excellent. And we will now move on to Atletico Madrid, the other title contender. Not such a good game. Hang on, let me read Paul Campbell's one of our... He's an Atleti fan and one of our Patreons. Just no visible game plan with Atleti, except trying to catch out teams with individual moments of quality and overwhelm them with squad depth. Very, very frustrating, even if predictable. So,
is that just this game, just this performance, or in general?
I think that's, yeah, it sounds like a building frustration. I mean, feel free to correct
me. I get it with this performance.
Yeah.
But it's what Getafe do. I mean, we had the same performance from Real Madrid this season.
Mm.
Mbappe scored in the 80th minute. Neom got sent off. When, do you remember when he came on against Vinicius for like 7 seconds, got sent off. Sancris got sent off. Getafe nearly equalised in the last minute with nine men. And you Real Madrid come away from that game that night thinking, well, thank God that game's over with. We haven't got to go there again this season. And that's what Getafe do. They frustrate. They make life difficult. Llorente went off injured after 12 minutes, which kind of threw the balance of Atletico Madrid's lineup. Griezmann came on and they shuffled. Alex Baena was changing. I think Alex Baena played in about five different positions in that one game. And again, they rely on, you know, players coming off the bench to make sure that last 30 minutes, when teams like Getafe haven't got the quality on the bench, you're chucking on, you know, really, really good players. It's hard to keep the pace if you're the opposition. So, I mean, they put Conor Gallagher on, Hensko, Raspadori, Sorloth and Griezmann. That's not a bad bench, is it? I know Griezmann came in early. And there's still one or two others you're thinking he could have put Almeida on. Johnny Cardoso is back on the bench now, so he's making his way back from injury. The squad depth serves them well. They were lucky with the own goal. Domingos Duarte just kind of can't sort his feet out. When they scored that, I thought they were going to go and get another couple.
Right.
But Getafe, as they do, fought to the very end and made life difficult.
Yeah. Koke, landmark, 700 games.
Fantastic. 700 games. And I looked at it. It's nearly 500 in La Liga. That was his 498th in La Liga for one club. The last 14 seasons, he's played over 40 games every season.
Mm,
it's not just the fact he's a good player. Yeah. He's durable. He's fit. He's playing through injury at times. He must have done. You're never 100% fit for 40 games a season for 14 years. My question with Koke is, and he's a fabulous player. Do you remember when he was in the team that won the first title?
Yeah,
he was a right-sided midfield player, wasn't he? Hard working. Thiago was in midfield with Gabby.
Mm.
They were the two in midfield. Alder Turan, Koke, Costa, whoever, Falcao, was he in that team? I don't think he was. But Koke was sort of wide right. Was he a midfield? Has he always been a central midfielder and found a position in the team in the day?
I'm going to guess so, because he wasn't fast, and he's not.
That's what I'm saying.
Skillful,
he was never.
He's
not an obvious winger, is he?
No, but then Simeone certainly then he didn't feel the need to have obvious wingers in, did he? So
No.
Arda Turan was more attacking than some of the others, weren't they? But
Yeah.
they ground it out
Yeah.
in those days, didn't
And
they?
Koke, when he got into the team in that position, with Gabby and Thiago holding the midfield, he was the engine as well, wasn't he? He was like, he tucked in, played slightly more in field, but he was up and down the flank. And so how he's progressed as a player is astonishing, where you could never imagine Koke playing wide on the right now in the midfield position. And that you keep thinking his time's up. He's 33. I mean, he's got plenty of miles on the clock, of course, with 700 games. But every now and then you see his importance. And it has been after the bad start they had this season. Who did Simeone turn to? Koke and Griezmann. And he'll continue to do that this season. Do I think he should play every game? No, I don't at the moment. But he's still Simeone's assistant out on the pitch. But when I look at maybe what Conor Gallagher could give them in midfield, more in terms of energy and getting about the pitch more. But Koke is still very much needed. But 700 games is a fantastic achievement. Will he play for anyone else? I don't think he will, you know. I think it's out of question he goes and plays for anyone else in La Liga. I actually think he'll stay there till he's the last. He's given everything he's got, nothing left, and stay at Atletico Madrid.
Well, then
Or will he
you get
go off to?
invited for your day out at Athletic, at the San Mames, don't you? To be your one club
Yeah.
man,
I mean,
or
but the question is, will he go and play in Saudi? Will he go and
trade
play in
that
the
against,
MLS?
yeah, go and play, getting a fortune to go and play somewhere else, isn't it?
Yeah.
But a few have done that, haven't they? A few sort of one club legends who basically sold their one club status for a shed load of money. Right, let's do Betis 1, Girona 1. So good result for Girona. Vanette scored the goal for them. I mean, I don't know if is clinging on the word, because Betis are
No,
in,
I think
yeah.
he's rectified things in the nick of time. There was a
Right.
period, there was a, I mean, it 2 or 3 games ago, I read out the team and read out the bench, and my criticism was this team shouldn't be in this position. And I think they've just rectified things. In the last half a dozen games, they've improved. The last couple of games, they've got 4 points in the last 2 games, and things look on the up. And it makes it really incredibly hard to look at the bottom of the league and think, well, they're obvious candidates. You know, even Oviedo picked up a point, and they're not dead and buried. Levante, yep, they're going to be a struggle. Two of the newly promoted teams. Osasuna sliding down the table, but Girona definitely. I mean, I thought they were quite fortunate in this game, I have to be honest. I thought they had a really good first half, really good first 20 minutes. Hector Bellerin was replaced at half time because he was probably tied up in knots. Brian Hill had him on toast in the first half, and they had to make that substitution at half time. He wasn't getting much help from Anthony ahead of him, of course. But that no, Girona looked like the Girona of old. But as the game went on, Betis took control. Should have won the game. More chances, more possession. But Girona defensively were much better than they were in the months of August, September, and October.
No complaints about the red card for this one.
I don't. There is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's big debate. Even in your intro, you're joking. I mean, McTominay scored the worldie last week.
Yeah,
That's one of the
amazing, wasn't it?
best. When I see the still pictures of the height, his boot is. You can't jump, and you wouldn't get your head that high. And I think it was a big centre half jumping for it. McTominay's boot was a foot above.
The
So.
amazing the people say, "Oh, I've never seen that before." I do. Ronaldo reminded me. Did Ronaldo in the Champions League, was it away to? Was it away to Juventus? I'm going to say
Yep.
similar overhead kick.
I mean,
And
Gareth
something,
Bale's against Liverpool. How high is he for that? Are we banning the overhead kick? That's
But I
the
do think
problem.
you've got to look at where your opponents are. There was no one next to McTominay, so it was a nice clear jump, wasn't it? Whereas, is it Joel Roca is. If the other guy's trying to head it, you
I
can't
know.
kick him in the face. You
Yeah.
know, you just can't, can you?
No, you wouldn't want to be in the end of it. Fair play to Joel Roca for putting his head there, knowing this might happen. Man up, toughen up, I say. I'm joking. It's a consequence. If he's going to do an overhead kick, you don't want to let him do it. But it's and Antonis was kind of it was a he was crossing it, wasn't he? He was going to hook it back in the box. He wasn't a shot. I mean, when you see the impact, yep, it's dangerous play.
I do think basically you're almost telling the attacking player you are taking a gamble by doing this. So by all means, if you think you want to be a Ronaldo or a Scott McTominay and you want to score this amazing goal, Ugadura, crack on and do it, but be aware that if you
I
get it
guess so.
wrong and you kick him in the face, you're going to get sent off. That's all right, isn't it? That's a compromise, isn't it?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, it's hard in the heat at the moment for a player to look and think, is anyone near me? Can I jump up and do a scissor overhead kick? It's.
But I would compare it. You know the one that we've talked about many times before, that they have started clamping down on goalkeepers coming out and having a smash. And basically, the rule was always, oh, it's the goalies allowed to go out and like total the bloke and knock him out.
Knees up. We're at the knees. You don't see that as often now, do you? The knees up. I mean,
I
that
think
was a kid. That was ridiculous. That used to be a straight race between you and the goalkeeper, and he could chuck his knees up in the air and just catch you all over the place and get away with it.
So yeah,
I
I
mean,
honestly.
throw-ins. If we're being picky now, some of the throw-ins I saw this weekend, an absolute joke.
As in,
Especially now the long throw-in is back in fashion.
yeah,
Yeah,
what's
by all means, just hold it in one hand. You may as well do that
oh, I
now.
see,
There's players that I saw one player. I can't remember one of the games I did. Both feet were over the touchline. One foot was clearly off the floor, and he was throwing it from not behind his head. There was nothing right about that throw-in. I'm thinking, you may as well just pick it up and lob it in with one arm now, like a goalkeeper's throw. It's ridiculous. So we have millions of rule changes, law changes. I guess the law change for overhead kicks hasn't changed, but in this instance, Anthony did get the red card.
So let's talk about the Valencia derby, shall we? Valencia beat Levante by a goal to nil, and Ugaduro will be a bit legend, isn't it, to do this in a derby?
Yeah, why didn't he play? I mean, I think he's limited in terms of his talent, but he'll give you everything. He'll sweat blood. He's aggressive. He chases lost causes. He's ideal for Valencia's situation at the moment to have up front. Beltran is the player they've brought in, maybe a little bit more technical, but doesn't carry the weight of purpose that Hugo Jura gives you. I mean, he's a relatively young player to be a leader in the team, but he is, and they need him to play up front. So the fact he comes off the bench and scores hopefully gets him a regular starting position back at centre forward, because he's the type of player that Valencia need. Full of admiration for Hugo Jura. I really enjoy watching him play because of his attitude. He's not playing in the best ever Valencia team, but he'll give you everything up front. So I'm always surprised when he's not on. In the starting lineup, but again, an excellent improvised finish. Levante didn't get going attacking wise till they went behind. They keep the ball well, they knock the ball around well, they've got a good away record. They didn't deserve anything from this game because it took them too long. It took them until they went behind to actually show some purpose. Morales probably should have scored, should have got an undeserved equaliser. Chipped the goalkeeper as he was running through, and it was neither a shot or a cross, and no one could get on the end of it, and it didn't hit the target. That was probably their only chance, to be honest.
So Osasuna are in a bad position. We were discussing them the other day, weren't we, with the Patreons? So they were leading against Real Sociedad at half time, ended up losing by 3-1. So the good news here is Real Sociedad finding a bit of form, but Osasuna with a home defeat, they really can't afford.
No, and it shifted now from Michel being the one under pressure, and to Alessio Lisci now, who's the kind of everyone's looking in thinking, well, the sufficient points, just they need to score goals away from home. They need to start picking up some points. Just one goal scored away from home, that was a penalty, and the relying on victories at home and taking the lead in this, I thought they'd go on and win it. Memorable goal from Barinachea to wrap things up at the end. It's an extraordinary goal because he's not balanced properly, and he actually slips and falls as he's hitting it. It's one of those from the halfway line, if people haven't seen it, over the goalkeeper Sergio Herrera. I thought he still could have got it, to be honest. I mean, I think he takes too long to realise, oh, he's shooting. from around the halfway line. But that was better from Real. I have a theory about Real Sociedad that if they get their push their back four up and get them closer to the midfield get closer to the front players, when they do get into attacking positions, there'll be more people like Brais Mendes and Gonzalo Guedes around the important areas of the pitch. So a lot of teams, they like to make the pitch big, spread the team around, play, you know, technical football in the spaces that they create, but lack that punch up in the final third. And there are signs that La Real are doing that now.
Yeah. Alaves nil, Celta Vigo one. His familiar words. Iago
penalty or no penalty? What do you think? It looks like someone's tied his legs, his ankles together at the same time. And he's, right. The keeper's asking for trouble, isn't he?
Yeah, because that's the thing. So he's going through on goal. Keeper comes and spreads himself.
We're talking Aspas.
Yeah,
of
and
course.
Probably.
Could have been Borja Iglesias. Yeah. We best clear that up. It's one or the other.
Thursday practice trying to win penalties. Yeah. And he probably he's stiffening himself up, isn't he, to try to buy it.
Oh, just a bit. Yeah.
So, yeah. So probably not.
He actually kicks the goalkeeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
So Aspas kicks the goalkeeper's chest, but the goalkeeper comes out, slides in, and it's you're asking for trouble when you commit yourself. If a defender was doing that and touched the striker, it'd be a foul. The goalkeepers think they can an element they can get away with because their arms are out, they're sliding out, they can touch the ball with their arms. It was, yeah, but it was, and this was a close game, so it was a decisive decision. This game could have gone either way. Celta are better as well. They're one of those teams that suffered at the start of the season, but are on the up. In domestic football and European football, so it's another big win for them away from home.
Yeah,
there's a lot of teams now on 16 points and 17 points, and
they've won 6 from 7 in all competitions. Celta,
yeah,
it's impressive, isn't it? With just the Barcelona game, we're just going to look at how many goals.
And we had that period that we were joking every week they were drawing 1-1.
Yeah,
so they haven't lost many games this season. They just were struggling to get wins. Now they're doing that, putting together a decent run of form, which I'm glad because I think the club's going in the right direction. The stadium looks better. Great fan base. I like the manner in which they've appointed the manager from the B team, and they're playing young players in the first team. So I would hate it for that to have fallen apart at the seams, panic, take over, appoint the new manager and comes in and brings older players in and we go back to the old version of Celta. So, yeah, I'm pleased to see them back on track again.
Yeah, and scoring penalties is important. Oviedo nil, Rayo Vallecano nil. It's Palathorn with a poor penalty, actually. Could have won the game, and it's another one where we end up with a couple of red cards.
Yeah, and Oviedo play good football as well, you know, for a team that they are bottom. They've scored 7 goals this year.
Yeah.
So there's got to be an element of relying on Santi Cazorla, who's going to be playing more now, I think, under Luis Carrion. At the start of the season, under Panovic, he was very much a sub.
Yeah, hit the bar, didn't he, with a brilliant free kick.
Yeah, Carrion is relying on him, and he still looks up to it, to be honest. But can they somehow turn reasonably attractive football into scoring goals? Defensively, it's not too, they're not the, you know, by any means, not the worst in the division. But it's just, it's how are they going to start finding goals to win games like this? It's going to be tough for them, but they knew that. 24 years since they've been in the division. Rayo, the games are coming thick and fast. They're probably slightly disappointed in this one, to be honest. Coming on the back of the draw against Real Madrid, their form has been good lately. I thought they would have been a little bit more impressive in this match, but they wasn't. And a nil-nil draw.
Yep, Espanyol Sevilla is this evening, and then we've got the whole European stuff to come, which is loads of games, and we'll be back. So we'll have a chat with that just for the Patreon, so that's how it works, everybody. Biased in favour of the people who give us money. Fancy. Right, we will be back. Terry, thank you. Yes, and I'll speak to you later in the week. Bye-bye.